day,
I've got somebody who lives with me in San Jose, and he comes from a very, very fine family. He comes from a very fine family. His parents lived in New York, and they came from a, he comes from a real Bonapartista family. They weren't for him, but a fine family. He learns with me, and we were first learning from Mishnah from a certain sefer, that there, if he would have made a note in it, it would have been quite all right. He would never make a note in it. And then we started some intricate stuff, being some intricate stuff, and this was a sefer. And it was necessary for him just to write a word in and out. I said, you can do it. Today, we do it today. You know what he did? He bought two sefer, two sets. One that he works and he writes, and the other one that he doesn't. It's a derech eretz. Your father. It's a derech eretz. I want to tell you that nowhere in Eastern Europe would a person daven without a jacket on. In a shirt. Unheard of. But in Eretz Yisrael it's stuck. It's gone. That's gone.
I mean, well, you know, Eretz Yisrael is much more climate also.
It could be the hottest day. But it came to doubt it. The hottest day. Simcha Zisur used to change his clothing for davening. He didn't use the same thing. He used to change his clothing. It wasn't so long ago. He would never go to davening. He went in, he had a special room, he went in and he changed his clothing for davening, standing before the king. If you were to see Reagan, would you go like that? Mr. Reagan, would you go like that? But to Rabbeinu Shlomo, yes. Please forgive me, Abu Mahi, you know, I don't mean you, I'm speaking to myself. I don't mean you. Would you go like that? So where is the logic? Who is greater, the Rabbeinu Shlomo or Reagan? If you don't want, are we pardon? No, but you can ask Mr. Reagan that. You can ask Mr. Reagan that. I mean, pardon?
Mr. Reagan might have a difficult time with that.
No, you don't, sir. Carter would say that a Ben Shem, but you wouldn't know whether he would mean it. Reagan, if he says it's a Ben Shem, you can take him for it. He means it. You can say he means it. So we do these things, but it doesn't make sense. So we are doing things that don't make sense. All the time we are doing it.
Very much so.
So we're just inconsistent, we are illogical. So the kind of people we are. I want to tell you that my uncle Zeta Tzadik Yivrocha, when he learned on his own, would never, as I'm sitting now, he would never sit like that before an open door. Once I saw him without his jacket at an open Gemara. Once. There was a heat wave in London as had never been before and has never been since. All the furnaces of the netherworld were opened in London. And he was in the garden. It was holidays. He was in the garden and he was sitting there. Took me out his old jacket. It was the only time I saw him without his jacket. And when he used to sit down and he'd been out for a little while, somebody had come to see him, and he came back to the Gemara, he used to sit down, and for a couple of minutes, didn't do anything. I told you this once before. I thought he did it to compose himself. Years and years later, only a few years ago, I came across in Chaim Volozhin and understood what it was all about. He purified himself. Not that he was comparing himself. In case something went wrong, he didn't do something quite right, that he contaminated himself with something, he was purifying himself before he set out and went to the world. That's about Jericho. It's a Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz. If there used to be in the Kelma Talmud Torah one page loose, Moreau was taken very carefully, it was put away and it was attended to immediately. Not a comment for the Gemara, page loose or the Siddur, one page loose. So it's a different thing. And right today we accept a lot of things. Accept it. Can't help it. It's gone. That is all gone. I tell you these things because I'm still trying to save a little bit for you. Daf Yud Aleph, the bottom of the page, the Mishnah, and straight onto the Gemara, and please, it's Chavrusa, will you get together? Pay yourselves off into Chavrusas, and I'm prepared to take two of those who will be having the most difficulty still with the Gemara. I'm prepared to take two. Good?
Yeah.
Larry, right? The others are all a little bit more advanced. You do your Chavrusa, and onto it straight away. It surely is necessary for me to go over the Gemara that you have revised.
Well, I'm going to need your opinion. Some outstanding questions that
need to be answered. Any question that you want to ask? No, I do everything I can to get one with no markings and all things on
it. It's hard to do that,
and here's some of the one they showed me one with a crocodile on it. I don't understand why I don't want it. Then they showed me one like this, and just plain.
I tried to find it.
That's what is it?
How do we understand that a cotton ball of gadola is like a mukar ace?
That a cotton habo ala gdelo is like mukar ace.
And that's what Rav is saying.
Yes.
And I think Shmuel is easy to understand. He says there's no mukar ace levasa.
Yes. How is it that Rav says that he makes it a mukar ace? Because Rav says that it becomes a little bit further in the Gemara, because Rav says it is a carnal relationship, whereas Mukas it's got a disadvantage over Mukas 8 in one way, an advantage in another way. The disadvantage is that it's carnal. The advantage is that he doesn't break the basuli. You follow?
Yes.
Any other questions?
Yeah, with the assumption that the Gemara doesn't waste any words, can you explain why the Gemara has that little few moments with Rabbi Yehuda and then seems to want to get rid of him?
I'll deal with that one day in a different context, not quite in the context of the Gemara, but what you've got to understand is that this Rav and Shmuel are first generation Amoraim, so they take it, you can take them as being the period from 200 to 250, roughly speaking. Rav Yehuda is the next generation of Tanoi. You follow? Rav Yehuda.
Amoraim.
I'm sorry, thank you. He's the next generation of Amoraim. Let us take it from 250 to 300, approximately, you see, is Rabbi Yehuda. When the Gemara is finally redacted, that's round about the year 500 by Rabino the Rabashi. So they are working on making a redaction of the Gemara. So so the ones that there are different schools. The one school says this, we've got Rav Yehuda said this, that Rav said it, and then when he said it in front of Shmuel, Shmuel said this. Another school says no, this was, we've got it that it came down with us. It wasn't Rav who, Rav Yehuda said he had heard Rav saying, and then he went to tell it that, to tell Shmuel what Rav said. He said, we have got it, it's come down, straight down, that this was a subject that was discussed in the yeshiva. They took out the agenda, and the agenda was, Kotn Nabo Al Hagdolo. What happened? And rather that debate came to the conclusion, I saw a Mukas 8, and Shmuel says, Ein Mukas 8 Rabosa.
And why does Rav Ashi Rabina choose to include it in the redaction?
That they would always do. Oh, these are the two schools of thought that have come. This is the way it came down. There is a difference.
But why go to the straighter version in the sense of the clear?
Well, we don't know which is the straighter version. These are the two that have come down to us. We don't know which is the straighter one. These are two schools that have come down to us.
No. What I'm asking is, we seem to have the controversy between Rav and Shmuel happening directly and with Rabbi Huda kind of
why not
just bring down the one that happened directly?
That just between them and not the other one.
Yeah.
Because these are the two schools of thought that come. What you're really asking me is what is the difference between the two?
Mm-hmm.
Can they be? That's what you really are doing. Yeah. I'll discuss that with you. I'll discuss it with you in connection with another thing, it will come up. I only hope that we will remember that. We come up together with that. But that is the way it works. Any other questions? Yes, Phil.
Is there a difference between Rav and Rava?
Oh, very much. Very much. Two absolutely different people. You follow?
I assumed it was, but Rava seemed to be saying the same thing that Rav said.
No, all what Rava does is he explains this Mishnah. He explains this Mishnah. You see, what Rovo says is as follows. Says Rovo, he says, Hochika Omar, this is what the Mishnah, this is how Rav at least understands the Mishnah. Hagodol Shebo Alaktano. This is how Rav understands it. Hagodol Shebo Alaktano. One. That's one. The Korten Sheboa Lagdolu Mukas 8 is 2, and that's all there is, they aren't 3. You follow?
Yeah.
And Korten Boa Kesubosim Mosai, their Kesubit is 200. So how many cases are there? Only 2 cases. Because we equate Korten Sheboa Lagdolu with Dolu with Mukas 8. You follow? And Rabbi Meir says through 200. The Chachomim only, when the Chachomim says, no, Mukas 8 is 100, and therefore Kotna Boalak Delo would also be 100. And that is the way that Rav would learn it. Now I'm going to ask you an interesting question. I'm going to ask you a question, does Rav say that only according to Rav, or does he say it also according to Shmuel?
I've never said.
Wait, Shmuel?
No, it's Shmuel.
No, all
well,
the answers are
And Shmuel, could we learn the Mishnah according to Shmuel in three cases? Case 1, Agoro Shebo Alaktano, says Shmuel. And Korten Shebo Alagdolu is number 2, says Shmuel. Umukas 8 is number 3. Kesubosim Mosayim, their Kesubi is 200, says Rabbi Meir. The Chachomim murmur and the Chachomim say case number 3, Mukas 8 is Kesubos Amono.
That would be to discuss.
So I want you to see, now that is the way the Rambam learns the Gemara. How do I know the Rambam learns the Gemara like that?
It's very possible.
Philip, you understand what I'm saying?
Pretty much.
That's pretty much, you see, you know, I like understanding language. What is pretty much?
You're a lawyer.
A pretty girl, I know what a pretty girl is. What is pretty much?
It meant that I got enough of the train of thought that I didn't want you to have to trouble yourself to go over it again.
So you understand it?
Right.
Good thought. I like to speak in the same language that I hear.
That's right.
Now, just look what happened. Can you see what I'm doing here? Can you see what I'm doing? According to Rav Chaim Robo says, Horika Oma, this is. But I only have to say that you should. I want to tell you something. In a matter like this, we paskin like Rav. When there is this kind of machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, we paskin like Rav.
What is this kind of machlokes?
This is, it's a machlokes in Mormon. It's not in Isur. It's not in anything that's really forbidden. We paskin like Rav. The Rambam paskins like Shmuel. So how can the Rambam paskin like Shmuel? The only reason that the Rambam can paskin like Shmuel is because he learns it when Robo makes that statement, how this is learned, that is only according to Rav that statement is like that. But Shmuel doesn't learn it like that. So really, Rav and Shmuel, the machlokus of Rav and Shmuel, works out, it's on the Mishnah. They're not introducing anything new. If it's on the Mishnah, then we paskin like Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah, she gets a kesubah of 200. But they work it out backwards from the Rambam. You understand a little bit now how it works. So now we can say that helps us to understand how the Rambam learns Rava. So the Rambam says, Omar Rava Hokika Omar. This is what it means according to Rav. Gordula Bola Talevla Klum. If a Gordu comes on a Ketana, she gets nothing at all. The Borchus Mikankanusen is for the Eindom. Because it is as if he pokes a finger into an eye, it tears. And tomorrow he pokes a finger into his eye again, and it tears again. It doesn't mean the tears are exhausted. The focus becomes, it's working. The kotna bola gdelma so mukas eight. And a kotna comes on a gdelma, he makes it a mukas eight, so mukas eight, and it's the same thing, a mukas eight, group of fruits that Rabbi Meir Barabona. But that's only according to Rav. Shmuel, we can leave it as it is. Shmuel is his own because it's for Boso. It's a separate thing. We can leave that Mishnah as it is. You can leave it as it is. So really, then it means that Rav and Shmuel are really arguing in what the Mishnah is. And the Rambam rather takes the Mishnah to leave the Mishnah as it is. That's what Shmuel says. Leave the Mishnah as it is. If it's leaving the Mishnah as it is, we pass like Rabbi Meir, it's the Chachomim. And so she gets a Kesuah. That's the way he passed it. Yes.
When Shmuel disagrees, I mean, are we saying that a Katan Gedolah is a Mukaseit or it's like a Mukaseit?
When Shmuel disagrees.
Yeah, when he disagrees, is it like a
Mukaseit? No, he says it's a separate thing altogether. Katan ala Gedolah is a separate thing. And the Kesuba, the Rabbi Meir, everybody agrees that the Kesuba is Mosai. See Shmuel. Rabbi Meir says it was done. The Chachamim says it was done. The Chachamim will only agree with disagree with Book of Eight.
That's right.
So they, everybody agrees it's Messiah. So therefore, the dealing is there's no question, says the Rambam. Everybody agrees that it's 200. A Kotna Bor Adela. So the Rambam passes Kotna Bor Adela is Messiah. It passes Machuah. Because if the Machlokas is really inhabited in the Mishnah. He says, if the Machlokas is in how to learn the Mishnah, I'd rather learn it as it comes down to us. Avraham, have you got that clear?
I've got that clear, but according to what you're saying, is that, are you suggesting that the Shulchan Aruch would argue on the Rambam and learn like Rav?
That who? That Rambam would argue on whom?
The Shulchan Aruch, or presumably you're saying the Rambam is taking a singular opinion, and there's other people that are going to pass like Rav.
No. Once the Rambam passes like that, you can be sure to go right through. The Shulchan Aruch passes the same as the Rambam.
Yes. Everyone passes like the Rambam.
I mean, pardon, yes. In this case, they pass like the Rambam, yes.
Uh-huh.
But that is the way the Rambam takes it.
No, it's very clear. Didn't you say earlier that in the case of the Maman, between Rav and Shmuel, he's passing like Rav?
Yeah, but the Machlokas here isn't between Rav and Shmuel, it's between Rav and
Shmuel. It's a Machlokas in how we learn the Mishnah.
The Wagner, the Machlokas and Rav and Shmuel are arguing on how to understand the Mishnah, but still
even the Rav and Shmuel. Yes, but that is, they learn the Mishnah differently. But that is.
But it's coming from their separate Hashkafah, so to speak. Anyway,
they come and they. This one had it, learned it like this, and this one learned it like that. They learned the Mishnah differently. But then it's a question of how. This is the way the Mishnah's come down to us. So the Rambam takes it, this is the way the Mishnah's come down to us. We'll take it rather as it is. If it's rather than it is, then it comes out like Shmuel.
Wouldn't Rav say that the Chachamim hold that it's 200 for Chachamim Bala Bedolim?
That's what Rav says.
Right, so if we hold like Rav.
But if Rav says it only because he learned the Mishnah differently.
Okay, but if we say we hold like Rav instead of Shmuel, then that's how we have to learn the Mishnah.
No, we don't pasken always like Rav and Shmuel. In some matters we pasken like Rav, and in some matters we pasken like Shmuel.
But this is Mamos.
So I'll just show you the
Mamos. Oh, I see. But this is clear. They're not one is stating a money matter. This is how they're learning a Mishnah.
That's right.
So they don't have to pasken like Rav.
You see, it's a matter.
This doesn't fit into one of those two neat categories where we can say either Rav or Shmuel. Is that right?
I don't think so. Okay. I don't think so. Anyway, that is the way to work out. Oh. I want a little bit of time to discuss matters with you also. You can't do that, right? But let me keep it up mainly as well. Yes. Just a little bit further, please, so that we've got it ready for the lecture we start. Omar Romi Bar Choma. Said Romi Bar Choma. Machlokes Bishedikir Bo. The Machlokes is of the Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim is only Keshehikir Bo. Where he knew that she was a it was a case of Kotna Shebo Ala Gedela. Alright? It's only where Hikir Bo. That when he wrote a Kesubah, the Machlokes of the Chachomim, Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim is only, it's with Mukas Eitz. The Machlokes is with Mukas Eitz.
How do you translate that?
Hikir Bo, that when the Choson writes the Kesubah for his Kala, he knew that she was a Mukas Eitz.
He Kikerbom is what then?
He recognized her. That's right. He recognized her for what she was. She was a mukas etz. So he says, Oma Romi Bar Choma, machlokes kishi Kikerbom. The machlokes of whether she is whether Kesuba is 200 like Rabbi Meir or 100 like the Chachomim is only Keshe Kikirbo. That is, when he wrote the Kesuba, he knew that she was a Mukasaitz. So there Rabbi Meir says, you put in 200, and the Chachomim say, you put in 100. There's no argument about it. The Rabbi Meir Madamiro Levogeris. Rabbi Meir compares her to a Bulgaris, and a Bulgaris gets a Kesuba of 200.
What's a
Bulgaris? A Bulgaris is the girls are, this is starting from the bottom, you get the Chusum Ibas Gimel Shonim V'Yom Echot, you get a Ketano, that's from 3 years old to 12 years old, a Na'aro from 12 years old to 12 and a half years old, and that is the most important time in a girl's life, from 12 to 12 and a half. But the most important time in a girl's life, from 12, then she's a Na'aro, and after 12 and a half she's a Bogeres. And when she gets married she's an Isho. Got it? So Rabbi Meir Medami Lola Bogeres. And if a woman is a Bogeres, then she gets a Kesuba of 200. Now why he brings this in, I just want to explain to you something, that it is possible also that a woman, when she gets older, she can still be a Basula, but she loses a Basuli. Does that happen?
Sorry, I didn't.
It's possible that a woman, she's 12 and a half, and now she's already after 12 and a half, she's an Isha, and 13 and 14, and she doesn't get married, and 15, and she's 20 and 25, and she doesn't get married, and 13, she doesn't get married, and 35, and she's still not lived with a man. It's possible that she can lose it the suit.
She wears tampons. If she doesn't injure herself, then there's no reason why the hymeneal ring would ever. No.
Even in an older.
Even in an older woman. It doesn't. If anything, it's tougher. It's more fibrous and tougher.
Well, anyway, when the Gemara says that it is possible that a Bogeres, it's possible, it may be because as she gets older there, but there are very many things that can happen in the form of Mukas Eitz. So it's going to happen,
correct.
See? But if she is a Bogeres and she hasn't got a Basuri, she still gets 200. If she hasn't had an association with a man, she still gets 200. So Rabbi Meir, Madami Lo Le Bogeres, Rabbi Meir compares it to Bogeres, the Rabbonin Madami Lo Le Be'ula, and the Rabbonin compared it to a Be'ula. They say, we'll soon see why.
You're talking about Mukas Eitz?
About Mukas Eitz, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Rabbonin says, it's as if she's a Be'ula, that is, she's had an association. Avon Lo Hikirbo, but if he didn't know Divrei HaTorah V'lo Klum, everybody agrees that she gets nothing at all because it's a Mekach Tos. He thinks that she's a Basula.
You think she gets absolutely zero?
She gets no Basula. He thinks that she is a Basula. And he marries her as a Basula. And then he finds that she hasn't got any, she's a Mukas Eitz, she hasn't got any Basuli. And she is a Mukas Eitz, therefore she gets nothing at all. Just a little bit further. Ask the Gemara for Rabbi Meir, Amai Medami Lo Levogeres. Why does Rabbi Meir compare a Mukas Eitz to a Bogeres? Medami Li Be'ula, let him compare it to a Be'ula, to a woman who's had an association with a man. Answers the Gemara, but because he hasn't got a pasulim? Answers the Gemara, Be'ula is abibo maitse bidei oro. A Be'ula is a woman who has lost her pasulim through an action of a human being, through a man. Ho lo is abibo maitse bidei oro. But in a mukkas age, she's true, she hasn't got a pasulim. But there was no action of a human, of a man. The Rabbonon and the Chachomim are down the Mulonabu'ulo. They compare a Bukit 8 to a Bu'ulo. Ask the Gemara Nadamya the Bulgaris, let them compare it to a Bulgaris, because let them compare it to a Bulgaris. Answers the Gemara, Bulgaris lo is abibo maisa klal. In the case of Bulgaris, nothing was done to her at all. She wasn't a mukkas eitz, and nothing was done to her. But ho is abibo maisa. But in this case, something was done. At least it was done with a piece of wood, but it was done. Till there we go. We just want to go from there. I just want to introduce the next piece of Gemara, so you know what it is we are in for next week. And now I just
what
want to...
What do you say, klum?
Klum, nothing.
Yeah.
No klum. Klum.
She doesn't get a mana.
No, she doesn't get. If he thought she was a basula, and she didn't deprive him of it, that she was, and gives her kasuba of 200, and then he finds out that she is a mukkas eitz, that's not what he bought. That's not even what he wanted. So she gets nothing at all. That we'll still be able.
This is.
But if she had said she was, then she would still get a mana.
Then she gets a mana.
This is.
And then it's a mana. No. If the mayor says she gets 200.
Oh, mayor said, yeah, but the Chacham
say she gets 100. But if she doesn't apprise him of it, and he doesn't know, and he writes it to Super for 200, and then he finds that he's then she gives nothing at all to the Super. There's a very interesting piece of Rashi on that.
Relating to this, with the question that was answered by an earlier Rashi on the redeemed woman, or the convert, or the maid.
Yes.
Where there's a question of can he come and say Mekaf Toi?
Yes.
He says no, she doesn't have a Heskus of Betulim at that point.
Yes.
Right, which is, if he could, then she might fall into that category.
That's right.
Where she'd be.
That's right.
For nothing.
That's right. Now, Jim, I just want to discuss something with you. You know, part of the shiur I always leave you. A member of the Shir put a question. This was the Shaila. He is in a profession. And he works in a profession. He likes doing, if he's got to do a piece of work, he likes doing a good piece of work. To such an extent that he's a perfectionist. It must be perfect. At least to the best of his ability. What he finds he's doing is, when he's finished the piece of work, then he refines the perfection. And now the perfection has got to a higher degree, so he's back again on it to refine the perfection. He's learning also. This takes away from the learning. So, where does he draw the line? Am I making the question clear? Where does he draw the line? How far is he required to go? That is the problem that was placed.
You say he's learning also. What is he also learning? Learning more about the profession?
No, he's learning Torah. Torah is learning Torah. But if he goes on like that, he's going to have no time for Torah at all, you see. That's what's going to be. So, how does he work this? On the one hand, he wants to be loyal to his profession.
and do his work. On the other hand, he wants to learn a bit of Torah too. How is he going to work this out? Now, when you get when a shayla like this crops up, the first thing, you've got to start working on a source. The first thing is, am I required to be a perfectionist? Perhaps I'm not required to be a perfectionist. I do my work, finish, I've done it, no, but yeah, I hand it in, I get paid for working, I've worked so many hours, I hand my work in, and that's over, I'm paid for it. That's all. And I'm not even concerned with it anymore. You find something wrong with it, you bring it back to me, I go over it to see what's wrong. You don't find anything wrong with it, fine, go ahead. Whatever it is. Is that the way? Or is the way that one has to put more than that? For that there is a Midrash. The Midrash is on by his Halech Hanoch Imho Elohim. By Halech Hanoch Im Elohim. Hanoch walked with God. And the Torah says, and he was, but he died. He died when he was very young. There's a Midrash, and I'll put down the exact Midrash. It's like this. Omru Chazal. The Chazal said, Chanoch Tofer Man Olaim Hoyo. Chanoch was a shoemaker. That was his trade. In those early days, a sandal maker, a shoemaker. The Alkol Tefiro Utefiro. And on every stitch that he made, or your meyachei yechidim lekola, he was meyachei yechidim to his creator. So the question is, what is the meaning of meyachei yechidim? What would you say is the meaning of it? Meyachei yechidim.
It was individually
Yes, you are absolutely right. Rabbi Shmuel Salam discusses this midrash. We could say meyachei yechidim. One could say is he concentrated on thoughts of the oneness of Hashem. Those were the thoughts that went through his mind. Says the Rishon Lezion, that's exactly what he cannot mean and what he doesn't. See, that's against the deed. Because when you work, you're working for somebody. You've got to work properly. That's against the deed. Says Rabbi Shmuel Salanter, what it means is that every stitch, exactly as you said, you lighted on it, every stitch was an individual stitch, and what he thought of was only his b'yachid yichidim is, he was concentrating concentrations for each stitch, that each stitch that he made was so good that the person who wore it would be comfortable in it, and it wouldn't ever come undone. That he goes in the street and the sole comes off. Ever have that experience? Goes in the street, the sole comes off. So he was the guy that, that is what he did. Then the Midrash goes on, Kocho Derech Hanoch, the leaders, Kocho Derech Hanoch, the leaders Kona. Asher Yeti v'Yehena Lezulo Sev. And says, the Besoyer Salanta goes on and says, from where did Chanoch get it, that he's got to be Sev? He says, that's the Rebbeinu Shleilo. The Rebbeinu Shleilo, when he works with us, has to be the way the Rebbeinu Shleilo made our bodies. Can you imagine what went into it? To the human body, a healthy human body, starting from yourself. in the human body. It goes into it.
Just the way of the Beinishleim.
Can you imagine the Meyachid Yechidi has every little thing how it's got to be exact. And don't forget that if we have got imperfections in our bodies today, and Rachmanovitz love people are sometimes born with imperfections, that is because of a deterioration that is set in, which goes back almost to the time of Adam and Eve. There's a deterioration. But there was could have been the possibility that our bodies would have been absolutely healthy till the very last moment, And originally, death was through a sneeze. That was the death. That would have been the death. And the reason why we say to Gesundheit or bless you when you sneeze is because of that. But that was how it was. That is the way the Rabbeinu Shlomo made it. Now, makes the body. That's the way the Rabbeinu Shlomo works. And it says, V'holach tobi drochov, you shall walk in Hashem's ways. So if we are doing something for a human being, we must do it the same way. We must put our best into it. So there's no question that a job must be a job that is done what we call be'emunah. It must be done with faithfulness. And a person must put his all into a job that he's doing for another person. He gets paid for it. He must put his all into it. About that is no question. Now the only, how far does it go? Now let us take a case. What happens if a person works for another person and he produces a good piece of work and he wants it and he wants it to get white enough? He puts so much into it, he gets ill. Is that right or isn't it right? What has happened here? On the one hand, he's got to put in an extra, he must do his best. On the other hand, he's done it so well that he's got in. So what happens here is that there are two things in doing one's best. There is what we would call to bring it to its ultimate conclusion. I refine it and I refine it and I refine it until I can't refine it anymore. My best. It's the ultimate conclusion. The other thing is I bring it to its logical conclusion. There's a difference between bringing something to its ultimate conclusion and to its logical conclusion. If my doctor tells me I must live in a cool climate, tells me that it's too hot in Mexico, San Diego, I must live in a cool climate. I hear he tells me that I must live in the cool climate. I go and I immediately sell up everything and I move to the north of Alaska. So what have I've taken to its ultimate conclusion. That's not what it's meant. Water. I must drink cold water. I'll make it so cold, I'll refine it so much. What does it become? It's not. It's bringing it, it's driving it to its ultimate conclusion. It's now no longer a liquid even, it's a solid now. I've driven it, instead of taking it to its logical conclusion, I've taken it to its ultimate conclusion. And that is something that one has to be able to do. To drive it to its ultimate conclusion, that's not something that is expected of me. That is only with Hashem. The Hashem is an Ein Sof. There is no end to Hashem. There is no end to the way that He can create the human body. Ein Sof. There's no end to it. I must emulate Hashem. It says, "Beholachto bidrochov, and you shall walk in His ways." I must emulate Hashem. But I am a soul. I am finite. So in my work, I can't emulate Hashem that to the Ein Sof. I'm finite. So I can bring something to its logical conclusion, but I can't bring it to its ultimate conclusion, and I'm not expected to. So here we come to another idea that we work with, and that is what we call Hesach Hadas. Hesach Hadas means that there comes a time when a person has got to be able to withdraw himself from it. You know the old philosophers used to work with something, with the Achilles and the tortoise, where Achilles gives the tortoise a start in a race. He gives him a 100-yard start. Gives him 10-yard start in a 100-yard race. And they work it out that as Achilles runs 10 times as fast as the tortoise. So they work it out that Achilles can never catch up with the tortoise. Because when the Achilles has done 10 yards, the tortoise is 1 yard ahead of him. When Achilles does that yard, the tortoise is a tenth of a yard ahead of him. When Achilles has done that tenth of a yard, the tortoise is a hundredth of a yard across him. And when he's done that hundredth of a yard, the tortoise is a thousandth of a yard across him. And they couldn't find out how to work out this thing. They couldn't work it out. Today they worked it out. But in those days, they knew it wasn't so. But to work it out, they weren't able in those days. They weren't able to work out how you get over the difficulty. So there comes a time when you refine it to such an extent that it's reduced to nothing. It doesn't mean anything anymore. There is no such thing as perfection with human beings. So you bring a thing to its logical conclusion, and then you are Messiah Das. That's all. You don't let it worry you anymore. I withdraw my mind from that now, and now I'm busy with something else. How do you know when it is? Each person has got the seichel. The seichel is a sense of judgment, and you've got to use your sense of judgment for that. Nobody can tell you. You've got to be able to judge that yourself. Fits into everything. This is how it is. I'm ready to present it. Here it is. And then I'm Messiah Das. Nothing. Don't think of it. File is closed. Here it is. This is my piece of work. Can't do anything more than that. Robert Louis Stevenson took a day to write a page. James Barry wrote much more quickly. And James Barry's mother detested Robert Louis Stevenson. And James Barry said to his mother, "Mother, because you know he writes better than I do." And that is the truth. But he only spent a day on a page. He didn't spend his whole life on a page. Otherwise he would never have produced anything. A day on a page, but that was all. And when the page was finished, it was finished, and he didn't go back over it. Didn't go back to it. Finished. So he produced books, not very many, but he produced books, he wrote. And that is the way. Once it's over. Then there comes another question. In all this, another question comes in.
I just want to give you an example of it. I made some notes because I was asked this question at very short notice. The Chazon Ish wrote his works. Some of you might have seen them. They are very difficult. If you want to find something, it's difficult to find them. So the Gerb of Briska once said to him, they met and he said, Chazon Ish, explain to me, when you want to find something that you wrote, how do you find it? So the Chazon Ish smiled, he knew what he meant. And he said to himself, if I would write the way you would like me to write, I would never finish. He knew it wasn't perfect. He knew that he would have wanted to make a better job of it, but he knew that if he would make a better job of it, he'd never finish it. It was more important for him to finish the work that he was doing than it was for him to polish it up and polish it up and produce a perfect piece of work, he said. And the Belbel agreed with it, accepted it. The Belbel wrote two sforim, both of them very slender, but every word. I mean, you can't go wrong with a word there. It's a different type of thing. But then, that is all he did, because the Belbel was essentially a man of the spoken word, and the Chazon Ish was essentially a man of the written word. Came out differently. So, we can see that perfection will bring it to its logical conclusion, and when you go beyond that mark, then it's no longer, you're not producing the article. Well, you don't have to do that. Then, of course, there's another thing. I said, what is the position? If a person works, and he works to the stage that he becomes ill, so is that the right thing? Is he doing the right thing? That's wrong. You've done something wrong here. This is not your business. I'm going to ask you another question. What happens? He works, and he works so hard that he has a mental breakdown. Is it worth it? Is that what he's supposed to do? Certainly not. Which is worse, getting ill or getting a mental breakdown? What would you say?
That is what the owner said.
A person gets ill, I say a mental breakdown, nothing is worse. I think a mental breakdown is worse. There's another type of breakdown. The only difference is that the third type of breakdown, you don't notice it at the time. He neglects his Torah. He's so busy refining his perfection. There's a shear, he can't come to a shear. He's got a chavrusa, he can't work with his chavrusa today. He's got to perfect it. Next week he's still busy, he's got to perfect it, he's got to get it out. Hasn't got time. He doesn't notice what's happening to him. Is that right? I gave you three examples. The person who gets physically ill, the person who gets mentally ill, and the third one is the person who gets spiritually ill. I can tell you that the person who gets spiritually ill, is the rest of us. He doesn't know it. That doesn't make it any better. And if a person doesn't know that he's got a disease, hasn't got any pain, doesn't know that he's got the disease, and then it breaks loose. And he finds that he's had it for 2 years already.
but it's too late. Can't do anything anymore about it. Otherwise, he would have had pain. If he would have had pain, he would have been. Didn't have any pain. He got to know about it 2 years later, and 2 years too late. If it's a spiritual, if you become spiritually ill, you can go through your whole life and you don't become aware of it. When you become aware of it, for the first time, on the own awareness. When you become aware of it, says the Gemara, the first thing that is done to a person on the own awareness, the life after death, is taken in before the Rebbeinu Shlomo, and in the presence of the Rebbeinu Shlomo, they ask him a question. Did you set aside fixed times for the study of the Torah? Then for the first time he becomes aware of it. And he says, what did I say? I had to get through my studies in order to be able to make a living. I had to then make a living. I had to support a wife. I had to support children. And the children grew up, and I had to support them. They had to go to university, and I had to support them. When did I have time for this? When did I have time? And he puts up a case, and he puts up a very good case. Very good case. Rebbeinu Shlomo says, I must accept it. Good argument. Not guilty. He's not guilty. So what has he got? He's not guilty. So what has he got? They speak, he doesn't know what they're speaking about. He's got nothing there. He's got no temper. See, now he wants to learn. Again, you can't learn. What you've got, you can work on. You can build on what you've got. You can't learn. How long is this going to last? To eternity. Is it worth it? Is it worth it? It's just, I'll be saying, it just doesn't work out like that. So a person must be able to be Messiah does. This is my work. I'm now forgiven. And now I'm going to reality. And I close it. If I'm working for something, my superior goes through it, I can tell you that if that piece of work has been done well, you won't find anything wrong. If you find it, it's a small thing up to the drive. That's all. And that is the way one deals. Out in Torah, that is the way one deals. Whereas one has got time for eating and time for washing, and one won't say, I've got to do my work, I've got to do this, I've got to attend to my physical needs. That is how we should call this really God. I made another note about somebody who asked me something, and I said, I will tell you a message about it. I don't remember what the question was. Does anybody remember? Somebody said, and I said, all right, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
big condolences to Dr. Cohen and Dr. Father. We all sympathize deeply with Dr. Cohen. I didn't know his father, of course, but he was just this I can say. He must have given him a nachas ruach. Was he aware that you come to a shield, and that you and the Tzalel, that it goes on? It's quite possible that there was a time in his life when he wondered what would happen if it would go on, whether he wasn't the last in a chain. And I can imagine what this did for a person like that, that he sees that this goes on and he still lives to see it. And that before the davening, you said the mailing, and you said the kaddish for the soul. This is the greatest thing that there can be, that it goes on. Person is, and if he's a son that can say he's Kadeo, he's Kadesh, Meira, boy, knows what it's all about. He knows this is the Kiddush Hashem, this is what it's all about. That is the comfort that that we can give you, Dr. Cohen. Now,
I just realized I've been derelict in delivering a message for you regarding the tapes. You suffered for
years.
A separate tape
for Dr. Morrow. Are you attending to a tape for Dr. Morrow?
I have a separate one, just one I
haven't. Yes. He's away out of the state. Have you pardon?
So you can get a tape of the tape. It's not the same as the tape of the shear, but of course.
A tape of the tape, that's the order of time. That is one thing. There are several apologies. There's an apology from Michael Medved, and an apology from Zek. Is there a person? Avrom Zekka, there's an apology. Anybody else? I remember those were the apologies.
David Foyer's out of
town. David Foyer's out of town, yes, out of the state. Maybe some others who are away. Now, it is Hanukkah tonight, and naturally we'll have a little bit to say about Hanukkah also. But first of all, let us get through a little piece of Gemara, and then we can do about the deal with the Hanukkah. Is that all right? Now, we should be at the stage, you should have been able, last week, to have done Chavrusa, and with that Chavrusa, you should have been able, Eleni, you weren't here last week, were you? It'll take you a little while just to get into it again, Larry, but don't let that disturb you. You'll always pick up something on the way, and then afterwards you get into it, and then it's smooth sailing once again. But we should now be in a position to go through the Gemara, and I should be able to show you a little bit of how one learns Pshat. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. The Mishnah, you all know the Mishnah, so I don't have to worry about the Mishnah. Rabbi Yaakov David, how are you with the Mishnah? No difficulties. Stop me as soon as there's anything that you're a little bit doubtful about, and I just want you to stop me. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. Said Rav Yehuda, that Rav said, Koten habo al hagedolo. Have you got the place, David?
No.
Right, right here.
Are so all mucus aches. If a cotton comes on a gadolo that he is less than 9 years old, and he comes on a gadolo, he makes her a mucus aches. Larry, do you know what a mucus aches is? Mucus aids is, we take it as literally as possible. She's been damaged, the osa mocum, she's been her basulim, you know what basulim are? The basulim have been damaged by a wood, a piece of wood was came in, poked her in that particular spot, and it damaged her, and she lost her basulim.
Right.
You understand that? Yeah. So Rav says that if a cotton, a boy of less than 9 years old, has an association with a gedolo, then he makes her a mucus H. She becomes a mucus H. Now there are two shittos here. What he makes her a mucus H. Well, just to do a little bit further, says Rav Yehuda. Ki amrito kamedi Shmuel. When I said this before Shmuel, I told him what Rav had said, and Rav and Shmuel were colleagues from their student days. When I said this before Shmuel, Omar Shmuel said, "Ein mukas eitz bevosor." There can't be a mukas eitz bevosor. You follow? He says there can't be a mukas eitz bevosor. Says the Gemara, "Iko de masniro lahosh maite ba'api nafsho." There are those who learn this shmaito, this dictum, this what we have heard, ba'api nafsho, independently of personalities. That in this case, independently of any person. Not that we've got this from Rav Yehuda, but kotna bola gedolo, if a kotn comes on a gedolo, Rav omar aso mukas eitz shmuel omar ein mukas eitz verboso. Rav says he makes her a mukas eitz, and Shmuel says that there can be no mukas eitz through flesh, it can't be mukas eitz. Now, just this little piece of Gemara, let us understand it. First of all, just a technical thing, what difference does it make if Rav Yehuda tells us the machlokas of Rav Shmuel, or whether we've got it directly, we've got it handed down to us, that this was really a machlokas of Rav Shmuel? The second one is stronger. If it's not, Rav Yehuda tells us, but this has come round to us, it's stronger. Because the way Rav Yehuda says, he said, "I heard this from Rav, and this is what Rav said, and when I said it in front of Shmuel, Shmuel said that and that." Did Rav and Shmuel meet on the subject? They didn't meet on the subject. It's come down to us differently. Kot nabo ala gedolo. Rav says, "I saw Mukas 8, and Shmuel says, "Ein Mukas 8 the bosser." That is, it's come down to us that this was a discussion that the two of them had. Either they had it privately, which is unlikely, or they had it in front of the whole yeshiva, and in front of the whole yeshiva it was on the agenda, and this is what the views that they had. So they had the opportunity of facing one another and discussing with one another, and this is the decision that each one made. So the second one is a stronger case than the first one. Is that clear? So that we've got it. Now comes a question of learning pshat. What worries us now is what actually happens if a kotna bo ala gadelo, does he rupture the basulim or doesn't he rupture the basulim? That is the question. Does he rupture the basulim or doesn't he rupture the basulim? Now, there are two shitas rishonim in it. The one school says he does, and the other school says he doesn't rupture the basulim. Is that clear? Yes.
But if we're going to call her a mukach ed, it would only be because something has happened.
We'll be going to see about that. We're going to see about that, you see. But in any case, we've got to have difficulties with one of them. Now, if we take the case of Rashi, if we take the case of... these are the two schools of thought. One school says he does rupture the psuri. One school of thought says he doesn't rupture the psuri. Now...
Rabbi?
Yes?
I want to go back. Okay, now you have one school of thought that says this rupture.
Yes, but that is in Rishonim.
In Rishonim.
In Rishonim. The Gemara, from the Gemara itself, we can't understand.
We don't have that from the Gemara.
The Gemara doesn't say anything. Yeah, but we've got the school of Rishonim.
So now we have two levels. We have one level
of Gemara,
and then another level. This,
what I've told you is only the Gemara.
Right.
But we must ask ourselves the obvious question: does he rupture the Besudim or doesn't he rupture the Besudim? That is the obvious question. Is that clear? Now, there's two schools of thought. One school says that he does not, that he doesn't rupture the Besudim, and the other school says he does rupture the Besudim. Now these are Rishonim. These are Rishonim. I want to work with a school who says that he does rupture the Besudim, because that seems to be the one that Rashi takes. Rashi.
Excuse me, Rabbi. I'm a little confused. Actually, these are what? Either Amorayim or Tanayim.
Which ones? Ramshul Amorayim.
Amorayim.
Yes.
We also refer to them as being Rishonim?
No.
No, that's what I'm asking.
That's the latest school. Rishonim. Rashi belongs to the Rishonim. Tosfos belongs to the Rishonim. The Rambam belongs to the Rishonim. The Amorayim stretch only as far as 500. The year 500. From the year 1000 begins the Rishonim, and the Rishonim stretch from 1000 to 1500. But 500 is there. So we are dependent. We want to understand the Gemara. Without the Rishonim, it's impossible to understand the Gemara. Hadn't it been for the Rishonim, we would have lost the Gemara. Rashi especially. Without Rashi, we would have lost, we wouldn't have been able to know what it was. All we would have had would have been those things, the Kilsonsinas. That's what we had. That's all we would have had. We wouldn't have understood it.
Right. That's
all we would have had. It's only the Rishonim that saved it. Now, the Rishonim. So, what was before the Rishonim? Before the Rishonim, it was child's play for them. They didn't have any difficulties, they understood it all. They worked through it before the Rishonim. And the wonderful thing about the Rishonim is, and here you've got to be a little bit careful, the wonderful thing about the Rishonim is that they are sufficiently close to the Amorayim to still have had the unbroken tradition. The unbroken tradition from the Amorayim through to the Gaonim, from 500 to 1000 there was a period of the Gaonim, and so they are the unbroken tradition. We can work out the Rambam, we know these teachers, we work it right back to the Amorayim. You see, there's no difficulty with that. So they've still got the unbroken tradition, that is on the one end of the scale. On the other end of the scale, they have got the other advantage, we have got the advantage, they are still sufficiently close to us for us to be able to understand them. So we've got a double advantage. When it comes to the Gaonim, we have terrible difficulty, we don't understand the Gaonim. We've great difficulty with the Gaonim. But with the Rishonim, we can still understand the Rishonim. So the Rishonim is a double advantage. They are sufficiently near to the Amorayim that they know that they know the Amorayim with an unbroken tradition, and we are still sufficiently close to them, we're only 500 years away, to be able to understand them. I must, however, make a reservation about the second part of the statement, that we are sufficiently close to understand it's not as simple as I've made it. In order to understand the Rishon today, for us to understand the Rishon, we go to a very early Achron. The Maharshal helps us understand the Rishon. The Maharshal helps us understand the Rishon. Rabbi Akiva Eiger helps us to understand the Rishon. We have to, the Mogen Avrom, the Shach, these help us to understand the Rishonim. We've got difficulty in understanding the Rishonim. But it is through them that we understand the Rishonim. That is one way in which we understand the Rishonim. Another way we understand the Rishonim is that we still have an unbroken line from the Rishonim to us. We still have an unbroken, so there is still, we can still catch it onto it. But I must tell you, it's becoming increasingly difficult to really understand the Rishon. But we've still got, that is the way how we understand Rishon. We've got help. Now we've got schools in the acronym of how to understand the Rishonim also. Mm-hmm. But that you don't have to worry about. Now the way when I learn with you, I am very careful to take one shito. You know what a shito is? One thesis. To take one shito and work through that one shito, and not to confuse you with several shitos. And I'm very opposed to that, and I know a lot of it is being done. The Rashi says this, and Tosfos says this, and the Rambam says this, and this one says this, and the Ritvor says this, and the Ram says this. You're given with six shitos, so what are you going to do with them? The thing is to take one shito and work through your Gemara with one shito. And if you know the Gemara well with one shito, you've got it. Then it's easy, then you can go to your Tosfos. Then you won't have any difficulty with your Tosfos. Otherwise you don't know what it is. Now, when I was in Israel, last time, it's Hanukkah, so I want to speak to you about these things. So I want you to know about these things. When I was in Israel, at the beginning of this year, earlier this year, and I spoke to Israel just this, at lunchtime today, I spoke to Israel again, and again these subjects keep on coming up. These subjects keep on coming up. I discovered that in the yeshivas in Israel, that is the way that they are doing it. The exceptions, but the normal run of yeshivas. The Rashi says this, and Tosfos says this, and then it starts, the Ritvor says this, the Rashbo says this, the Rif says this, the Rambam says this, the Ram says this. So, there has come about a frustration. A frustration that a boy is in a yeshiva for 5 years, and he can't sit learning a piece of Gemara with Rashi in cases he can't sit learning it down in Rome. So there's a frustration. I spoke to a Rosh Hashiva who is very much aware of this, and he's one of those who works, got one sheet to know your Rashi first, and then when you know your Rashi, then you work on your Tosfos before you go to the Rambam or to anywhere else. Just get to know this. And when you've got this is your foundation, and then you can start going about. So when I spoke to him, I said, you know, this frustration is going on, and I see the young people, the frustration is there. So he says, yes, that is perfectly true, I understand it, but you must understand something else. That you've got a type of young man today who comes into the yeshiva, and you've got to catch his interest. So how do you catch his interest? By telling him all these things. Then he gets interested. It's exciting, you see. But it doesn't come down to the real thing. It doesn't come down to the real thing. Just like drugs. You know, you've got no idea, unless you really try, what a wonderful experience life is. The colors that one can see, the sounds one can hear. You've got no idea what it, when you sit and you work on Gemara, and it makes you aware of everything, and you make a brocha over everything. Make a brocha over everything. The awareness of it, and how it all blends together. It's so worthwhile spending all this effort and energy on Torah, on learning, and you can only get it through Gemara, you won't get it any other way, because the Gemara is the soul of the Torah. If you haven't got your Gemara, if you've got Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim, and you haven't got your Gemara, you've got a body without a soul, it's dead. The Gemara is the soul of the Torah. When you've got that, this is the whole world opens itself up to you. Now, when I think back, I knew my uncle when he was in his 90s. I knew the Polovizhorov when he was in his 80s. I knew Rabbi Abramsky when he was in his 80s. These people in their 80s, I knew my uncle when he was in his 80s, of course. These people, when they were in the 80s, the interest that they had in life and in everything that went on in life and in all the new discoveries that were taking place, whatever field it was, and the interest in the nature of the world that was taking place, and how they understood everything that was taking place, the historical events, the political events that were taking place, how they understood it all, and how it all fell into place. It was one pattern, it was like a symphony, where every note is there for a purpose. This is the way they were able to understand. It's a big experience, a very big experience. To them, life meant a tremendous amount, and they were living it to its full to the very end. Living it to its full. You get the person, he also wants to have that. So he takes drugs. He can also, he can get these colors and sounds and he takes drugs. But it's artificial, it's not real. You get it and you lose it. So it is with this too. Of course there's lots of excitement on it. But if you get the excitement without working for it, first of all, it's not the real excitement. You think you've got it. You haven't got it. It's just a little bit of artificial excitement. It's the drug for it. That's the, in turn, the total world is also drugs. That is the drug. Perhaps later I'll give you other examples of what it is, drugs in the terror. What's that, drugs? What can you do? This is what the young people want. You should, otherwise you don't keep them. So that is, we know it. So he said, he knows it. He doesn't do it, so one can speak to him. He doesn't do it. But then he loses boys. He says, they go away from me. Since they go to other places, it's not enough excitement for them. They want excitement. So, alright, he goes. I tell you that Meir Soloveitchik, this is at Tzvi Kushelevsky. If Meir Soloveitchik has got 15 kids, that's all. It went up to 17. He said he couldn't help himself. He's 15. But that's all. When Simcha Wasserman was here to me, he was speaking about it, he said, you know, the mayor seems to be the only place where they teach you pshat. But there are a few more places where they teach you pshat. So I just want to show the difficulties that there is. There is another difficulty that Kusilevsky tells me. He said, you know, you don't know what it is. They've got a Rosh Hashiva, and they've got excellent Rosh Yeshiva in many of these places. The Rosh Yeshiva is a person who went to a Yeshiva Katana for 4 years, and then he went to a Yeshiva Gedola for 6 years, and then he went to a Kolo for 10 years, so he's been on the job already for 20 years, and now he starts, he goes to Yeshiva, and they give him a shiur to say. He gives him a shiur to say, and he has to start off with them. He says, no, that's not a dalad, it's not all mud, it's all mud. That's, you see, it's aleph mem range. It's easy to remember, round, it's round, so it's a range. So you've got to teach it. Can you imagine his frustration? I'm giving you a caricature of it. Can you imagine his frustration? After 20 years, is this what he's got to do? After 20 years? It's like taking a great surgeon and the Red Cross engaging him to bandage fingers. I mean, person cuts himself in a factory, bandage up the fingers. I mean, you know, it's a frustration. So he wants to unload, and he sees he's got boys who can understand something already, so he unloads what he's told or what he knows. You see, he unloads it. Otherwise, he gets no satisfaction from it. So these are the difficulties that one finds. Should I tell you one other difficulty, or have you got enough already? You've got enough. You want another difficulty? I just want to tell you that you must know what these difficulties are. Give you another difficulty. There is a Torah way of thinking. It's a Torah approach. You're already getting into it, so you've got some idea of what it is. What they are also doing, and I can understand it because I've also done it. I can understand. What they are doing is they are adapting the Torah thinking to what, for want of a better term, I will call Western thinking. They're adapting the Torah thinking. Why? Because you've got people who are trained to think in the Western way of thinking. So you take the Torah and you fit it into a Western way of thinking. Which is bad. When they come up, I think that's the best way. Now, you see, one can do it, but the way to do it and to be very careful about it is when he understands it already, and now he's got the hang of it, then you bring him down to a Torah way of thinking. Then gradually you introduce it, but it's very hard work. You've got to sit down with the person and work with it. Those are the frustrations. There's one more frustration, but that last frustration is a technical frustration. And that is that you have got too few people working with too many. Not because the people aren't available. The people are available. But there's a question of cost. And you've got to have good places. Boys who come from America want to know, they want to be in a decent place, there must be a decent dormitory, there must be food and proper food. And so you've got a paucity of the proportion of teachers and students is wrong. I remember Professor Blackman of the Imperial College of Science, which is a postgraduate school, told me once that the ideal is three students to one teacher. Three students to one teacher. That is the ideal. That's how it should be. Should be engaged with. That's in his subject. In science, that is in his subject. In Torah, how much more so has it got to be? That's really how it should be. Those are some of the difficulties, and those are some of the frustrations. So when we are dealing with the peace of Gemara, the thing is to take one shittur, and it's got to be Rashi shittur. Take one shittur and work through the Gemara with one shittur and understand it with that one shittur. Then you are ready to go on. Yes.
Even Rashi, aren't there many ways to understand Rashi?
Well, you can, but not so easy. Not so easy. The Rashi, you can still get down to it and find out that this is Rashi shittur. Yes, but
before following that one shita, is there not a third possibility here that the Klatan may or may not break the Petulin and that it doesn't matter? Is that not a third?
Well, I think that is a thing, but you've said it extremely well. I want you to notice how you said it. You added just a couple of words afterwards, and those, please excuse me taking off my jacket, I said about it. You said, and it doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter. Those are the words we've got to examine, which will come up in these Gemara. You see, it may be a third possibility, but he may have, but he may not have. But then you added, and it doesn't matter. You remember what you said, and it does. Just those words are important. But you just see how it goes on now. So we will learn it. Let us learn it. And sometimes when you're learning Gemara, and you see those possibilities when you're learning the Gemara, sometimes what you've got to do is, and you haven't got any way of finding out. In fact, when I went through this Gemara the first time, that is how I went out. I realized that there were these possibilities, three possibilities, so I worked through the Gemara with one possibility, the possibility that I thought was most likely, and again, I come across a difficulty, come across a stone wall. Try another way, come across an iron wall, still works. Try a third way, I'm getting through now, see, so we're there, I'm going to try and work on that way. Seems to be more chance, but that is the way you've got to work it through. So I'm still making it a little bit easy for you. We're working through on the understanding, it seems to be that is Rashi Shita, that we actually ruptures the pursuit. So if he ruptures the basurim, then we can understand Rav very well. Rav said, I saw a mukus eight. He makes her a mukus eight. Is that clear? Says Rav. Then we can understand it. He makes her a mukus eight. Ki am rita kamed ishmue, when I said it good, Omar, ein mukus eight bevoso. Shmuel says that there is no mukus eitz bebosom. That is, what does it mean, no mukus eitz? With flesh one can't make a bosom. Either it is a beer or it's not a beer. You follow what he says? Either it is a beer or it's not a beer. So we are saying it's not a beer. If it's less than 9 years old, if it's not a beer. He says, if it's not a beer, you can't say it's mukus eitz. You can't say it's mukus eitz. Because a mukus eitz, we know exactly what a mukus eitz is. A mukus eitz means that something has happened there. But this isn't a beer. So what are you going to say? Mukus eitz, it's not mukus eitz. A basula, she's not a basula. So what does Shmuel say there? So he says it's a category on its own. This is a category on its own. A korban habo al hagdoli doesn't make her a mukus eitz. But this is a category on its own. But what is she? Is she a basula or is she a mukus eitz? And we are learning that he ruptures the basuli. So you say a basula she isn't.
And you say, Shmuel, that a mukis, you can't say that she's a basula because she hasn't got basuli. You can't, and you say you can't say it's a mukis eitz because ein mukis eitz be basar adam, it can't be no beer. You can't say it's a mukis eitz. So what is she? He says, I say it's a separate category. It's a cotton a boil out of bed, it's a separate category. That's all it is.
We don't want to call her a ba'ula because of the fact
no, that... No, she's not a ba'ula. A ba'ula, ba'ula means that there's been a beer.
And we're saying this is not a beer.
This isn't a beer. That's what Rashi says.
Okay.
You'll soon see that Rashi says so. And this is not a beer. So now we've got that part of it straight.
They all agree it's not a beer, right?
All agree that it's not a beer. That's quite right. All agree that it's not a beer. That's absolute. That's fundamental. Since it's a kota bola dole, it's not a beer. And if it's not a beer, so Rav says, yes, a beer it isn't, but she's lost her basuli. She hasn't got a basuli, says Rav. So it's a mukas eight. So Shmuel says, no, a mukas eight has got to be a mukas eight. It's got to be a mukas eight. But this isn't a mukas eight. So what are you going to say, Shmuel, is she a basula? No, she's not a basula, but she's not a mukaseitz either. That's what he says. And so we've got it. Now, there you already are entering a different type of thinking, you see. That is what Shmuel says. If we get to there,